Breaking news, Attorney General Barr to Jerry Nadler and House Democrats. Grave abuses in the bogus Russiagate scandal. We'll talk about that today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So before the House Judiciary Committee, as we speak, Attorney General Barr is testifying. He is testifying both about the Department of Justice decisions in combating these violent riots we have seen across the country that are still ongoing. And so it's quote, a hearing on the oversight of the Department of Justice. And, of course, Russiagate gets involved. And in his prepared remarks, which got cut short, actually, because this hearing started later this today, because Chairman Nadler was in a car accident. He was not injured, but it took him a little bit longer to get to Capitol Hill, to the committee on the Judiciary's hearing room. But Attorney General Barr said this in his statements. This is part of the record. Very strong language from the U.S. Attorney General. Ever since I made it clear that I was going to do everything I could to get to the bottom of the grave abuses involved in the bogus Russiagate scandal, many of the Democrats on this committee have attempted to discredit me by conjuring up a narrative that I am simply the president's factotum who disposes of criminal cases according to his instructions. Judging from the letter inviting me to this hearing, that appears to be your agenda today. So let me turn to that first. Let me go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Than, as we listen to this hearing, very different questions, a very different tone between the members of the Republican Party on the committee and the members like Chairman Nadler and the other Democrats.
Well, Jordan, the Attorney General turned the tables on him, plain and simple. Obviously, the narrative from Chairman Nadler, not just today, but leading up to the hearing, really for the last couple of years, has been that the Attorney General is nothing but a political pawn in the president's hand. Jordan, he not only refuted that very specifically, but he actually turned the tables and said, look, the importance of keeping political pressure out of the Department of Justice, that is important on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, not only from the White House, but also from Capitol Hill. And where I have felt the pressure is from Capitol Hill. Jordan, I liked this line in that sort of same section of the prepared remarks that you were reading from. He said, while it may be appropriate here on Capitol Hill or on cable news, that is to engage in political discourse, it is not acceptable at the Department of Defense, Department of Justice. At the department, decisions must be made with no regard to political pressure, pressure from either end of Pennsylvania Avenue or from the media or the mobs. Jordan, it was his way of saying, I've got to resist pressure from all angles, and the places that I felt it is not where you're saying it. I felt it from the media. I felt it from Capitol Hill. And by the way, that's the mission of many of these mobs on the street as well.
Folks, can you believe that after time, and we've got more evidence now, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday, we'll talk about more today, that, you know, Christopher Steele, the dossier, the main subsource has been identified. FBI lied to the FISA court, and Senator Lindsey Graham has indicated he believes he'll be able to prove that the FBI, under oath, lied to Congress. And that means they've lied to the American people, because those are your elected officials directly. And again, those are both separate crimes, because they said that at least that Christopher Steele's main source was in Russia, that they were Russia-based. Well, guess what? They weren't. They're U.S.-based at the Brookings Institute, who's got a little bit to answer for now. I don't know if I'd want to be part of that institute at the moment, because I'm sure that's under a lot of scrutiny. I mean, just think about that. Think about the fact that the agent who went to brief the Trump campaign, which is normal as you get closer and closer to Election Day on national security matters, was the same FBI agent tasked with investigating Michael Flynn in Crossfire Hurricane, Crossfire Razor, and put the notes from that meeting not into the briefing file, but into the Crossfire Hurricane file, which was to spy on the Trump campaign. We're going to take your calls about this. My dad will be joining us as well. 1-800-684-3110. Remember, July, it's an important month of the year for the ACLJ. It's a matching challenge month. Double the impact of your donation. Donate today at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey folks, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, I know most of you are listening on radio or Sirius XM, AM FM or Sirius XM, but if you're on Facebook and Periscope, I encourage you to click that share button, bring more people into this conversation as Attorney General Barr testifies, mostly getting beat up or attempted to be beat up by House Democrats over the response to violent riots. I mean, the fact that we're debating these two things, to me, just shows you how absurd the other side of the aisle is, how they will not let things go. They cannot let the Russia hoax go. As Attorney General Barr called it, bogus Russia investigation. Even at the same time that we have reports coming out on documents, by the way, these aren't like just verbal sources. These are documents, declassified documents obtained by Fox News, reveal that the FBI agent who delivered the defensive briefing on election interference to the Trump campaign in August 2016, quote, actively listened for certain topics, using it as a, quote, cover to monitor then-candidate Donald Trump and Michael Flynn. The document obtained by Fox News was declassified by Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe and sent to Capitol Hill. So all these members of Congress asking these dumb questions about Russiagate, and that's what they are, this hoax, just totally bogus, know this information. They know just what I'm reading to you. They got the document. But see, they don't care. It's election year, and they hope that you're not listening to a broadcast like this. So that's why, share it with your friends and family right now if you're on Facebook and Periscope. But get this. The document was dated August 30th, 2016, and filed under Crossfire Hurricane. So the document, the notes from the briefing they gave to the Trump campaign, didn't go into like a briefing notes for campaigns that we're doing right now. As we get to the, you know, you start getting those briefings as you get closer to election day because you have to be prepared to become president of the United States. So when it gets down to the final two, they both are getting, they're supposed to be getting the same briefing. Of course, Trump and his team weren't. They were being spied on because it was filed not under campaign briefings for national security issues. It was filed under the Crossfire Hurricane file. That was the FBI's code name, as you all know, for its investigation into whether the Trump campaign was colluding with the Russians, of course bogus, to influence the 2016 election. Crossfire Razor, the FBI's code name for the investigation into Michael Flynn, the Russia-sensitive investigation matter, and the Foreign Agent Restoration Act. The document states that the FBI officials Kevin Kleinsmith, Peter Strzok, approved Pitka's notes. Okay, so that's who was the FBI agent in charge there, Joe Pitka. And this is very interesting to me. Pitka, the FBI agent who wrote those notes on the Trump campaign to spy on them, was also tasked at the same time he was already running the FBI's investigation into Michael Flynn. So Fox News was told this briefing, and again, this is in classified documentation now, that's been received. Fox News got a copy. Capitol Hill has it. So all the members of Congress asking questions today on the left know this, that it was a quote, the briefing was a quote, cover to listen for any remarks of Trump or others about the Russia Federation. That's just part of it. Because now we also know, Than, that Christopher Steele's source was a think tank guy in Washington, D.C., based in Washington, D.C., not Russia. And in the FISA request, we know that the FBI said that the dossier was based off Russia-based information, the people. He wasn't, and he was the main source for Christopher Steele on Christopher Steele's payroll and on the Brookings Institute payroll, and was not Russia-based, so they lied to FISA, whether it was the FBI lying to the DOJ or that the DOJ and FBI both, that the DOJ attorneys knew it or not, will be interesting, but there should be people going to jail. And then, Than, as well, they did this, it appears, in congressional briefings, possibly ones that were done behind closed doors, because Senator Graham says he believes that Congress was absolutely lied to while these agents were testifying under oath. And that's a separate crime where you can go to jail, Than.
Jordan, they lied time and time again to all sorts of different audiences, including the United States Congress, which, of course, is going to have penalties. But again, Jordan, why did they lie? They lied in order to create a false premise to spy on an American citizen. We have to keep coming back to that. It wasn't just some minor abuse. It was lying to spy on an American citizen. And by the way, Jordan, that source you're talking about that has now been outed for working for the Brookings Institute, Jordan, I think it's fair to classify him as just a guy working in the United States who knew some people in Russia. That is not what you base an investigation like this on. A couple other points I just wanted to quickly touch on, Jordan. You mentioned Joseph Pienka. I just want to remind our listeners, he was the FBI agent that was actually in the room with Peter Strzok interviewing General Flynn, wrote the initial summaries, which Peter Strzok then later edited. Jordan, he is under a subpoena threat from the Senate Judiciary Committee. I think that's probably why many of these documents are coming out. I think there's probably some cooperation happening here. And just final point, Jordan, people have to understand, was this rooted in politics? Absolutely. But the impact went far beyond partisan politics. Jordan, everything that's coming together now shows that it really did threaten and undermine national security in the United States, because the incoming commander in chief, Jordan, who needed to be prepared to respond to these threats, was not only not getting accurate information, Jordan, he was getting fabricated information that undermines national security.
If you've got questions about this, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, my dad will be joining us live in the next segment of the broadcast as well. Jay Sekulow will be joining us. He is traveling, so he'll be joining by phone. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let me remind you too, before, because we got questions coming in, like Amy on Facebook, will anyone ever go to jail for this? Well, I believe there should be people going to jail for it. I know that there's a U.S. attorney. They only investigate potential criminal actions, and they don't just do reports for report's sakes. They investigate whether there should be criminal charges filed. Then it would go to court, and we're waiting for Durham and to see what actions will follow from that. But this is what Lindsey Graham thinks about it when this new information that was declassified by DNI Ratcliffe was received by Capitol Hill. Take a listen to Senator Graham.
Anybody that knew that the Russian dossier was unreliable and continued to get a warrant against Carter Page based on that document should go to jail for defrauding the court.
So, I mean, you've got the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee right there saying that people should go to jail. Now, Than, this is an interesting question, too, on Facebook, and one really that gets to the heart of Capitol Hill and the hearings like this, which are so partisan. I mean, they get so partisan the closer you get to Election Day. And as Attorney General Barr noted, you could tell how partisan it was going to be in the letter inviting him to testifying, like how nasty they were going to be to him. But Manfred on Facebook wrote in because, yeah, these people work for us. Why do these Democrats, why do they just make speeches? Why aren't they? Why not try to ask him tough questions? I think it's because they know he'd shoot him down, so it's better to use most of their time just giving speeches, attacking him, and not leaving him anything really to respond to.
Yeah, it's absolutely that, Jordan. I think it's also the fact that the truth hurts them in November. It's just the honest fact. I mean, there was no basis for an investigation here, yet the bureaucracy, the apparatus in Washington, D.C. continued to focus on it. I think they know if they don't just continue to distract in a political way, it has a negative impact on their election outlook come November. I think that's the secondary reason. Jordan, you talked about Chairman Graham's remarks that someone needs to go to jail for this. Look, I mean, I look no farther than James Comey and Peter Strzok. I mean, James Comey, it was running the show on all of this, intentionally leaking information that he knew should not be leaked, including conversations with the president for a political agenda, violating all manner of protocol in doing so. And then Peter Strzok, his signature is literally on the documents opening these investigations, refusing to close them against the advice of the Washington field office, editing Agent Pienka's 302, the summary of General Flynn's interview from the White House. Jordan, I think those two individuals have to be very nervous about the upcoming findings from John Durham. Should people go to jail? Yes, I think they should. But Jordan, I think it needs to go very high to the levels of James Comey and Peter Strzok, not just low-level agents, the people that were literally signing off on the decisions that were made and running the show.
Folks, we want to take your calls on it, 1-800-684-3110. My dad will be joining us in the next segment in just about 3 minutes. But I want to also let you know, and we're going to be talking about this coming up as well, the ACLJ with a big win in federal court with a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request. The State Department was trying to deny our request just right off the bat by saying it's called a Glomar response, and it's the CIA's usual and State Department. We can neither confirm nor deny that those records exist. And the court said, can't use that anymore because Rick Grenell, when he was Director of National Intelligence, declassified all of those unmasking requests that were made. So you can't use that anymore. So come up with another reason and try that in court or turn the documents over. And remember, they also included, this is an ACLJ case, that the argument by the State Department that it really wasn't Samantha Power was bogus because you can see when it's deputies on the list that Rick Grenell released and when it's the actual principal. And that if it says the principal's name, the court has now made the assumption now, you assume it is the principal themselves. But guess who else that means? The last unmasking request made of Mike Flynn was Joe Biden, not his chief of staff. It says Joe Biden. We'll go through that victory when we get back. Remember, Matching Challenge Month just ends this week. So ACLJ.org, double the impact of your donation. Donate today. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And we will continue to update you from the hearing, Attorney General Barr appearing before the House Judiciary Committee on, really, it's just an oversight hearing. But the two main topics are the administration and DOJ and law enforcement response to riots and protection of federal buildings, because right now, like, for instance, in Portland, there's federal buildings under attack. It's not just protesters. It's not peaceful protesters. They're under attack. So you have the left, the Democrats on the committee, siding with the violence, siding with the rioters. That's where they've cast their lot for this election. They think that that's where people want to go. So they're attacking Attorney General Barr for that. And they're still attacking him, which is, like, unbelievable at this point, after all we just discussed about the fact that the guy who was the main source for the dossier wasn't Russia-based. Was based at a U.S. think tank, Brookings Institute. And so the FBI and possibly the DOJ, if they knew as well, lied to the FISA court, and Lindsey Graham has said also lied to Congress. That'd be two separate criminal charges right there, because they said the main source for Christopher Steele was based in Russia. That's in their document, in their applications to FISA, and in testimony to Congress. So that means they lied twice under oath, at least. That's criminal charges. Those are easy criminal charges. My dad is joining us, Jay Sekulow, by phone. And, Dad, we also have had a big victory. We only told people a little bit about it in federal court on FISA, specifically on unmasking. We got through the court. Usually these courts, it's the State Department this time, and Samantha Power, who made the most unmasking request of any of the administration members as ambassador to the UN, which was very bizarre. And she gets listed all the time. State Department tries to respond with what's called a Glomar response. We can neither confirm nor deny. And the court said, not this time, because it's already been declassified that she made all the requests because of what Rick Grenell did as his time as acting DNI.
Well, it was that, plus the fact that they said that staff of Samantha Powers were to be treated. This was in the court's opinion, which was really very, very good opinion that Ben Sisney litigated in our Washington office. Her staff constituted her. They were the same as if it was her making these requests. And then, as you mentioned, the idea that they would use this kind of defense where we don't want to give out this information, the judge correctly pointed out that the former acting DNI, Rick Grenell, already had concluded that this information should be declassified and was released. So what we have is and we've alleged this in the complaint, a continuing pattern and practice of these agencies to try to not give information. And it's what's becoming increasingly clear is that the federal court system is, in fact, requiring that information to go. You never get everything you want to get in this litigation, but we're getting a lot of information. That information's helpful. And you have to ask yourself, why was the ambassador to the United Nations engaged in unmasking Americans, involved in a presidential campaign? Think about that for a moment, which is exactly what John Durham and Attorney General Barr, what Attorney General Barr is addressing those kind of issues right now. So I think that speaks volumes to the importance of the litigation that we're engaged in and why we're going to continue to pursue these to get answers that the American people deserve.
So, I mean, again, folks, we've got the preliminary injunction that was just filed in California on the singing ban. We've got this FOIA case. It's just now up. The blog is up too at aclj.org, so you can see the court's language as well on this. With a big victory, just getting past that Glomar response is huge, because that they usually use that all the time in the intelligence world, and that's it. But they couldn't this time, and they said directly, you can't do this to the ACLJ, is what the judges said. And then, of course, we have the over 1,000 requests that have come in from families across the country. Parents we are representing, because their children and the family is facing significant hardship because of various school issues, and we're preparing action in Arizona right now as we speak, and working with all of those different clients and contacts that have come in. But I want to read that from the language from the opinion, because I think it's that important for everyone to hear what the judge said in this matter on this FOIA request. It's significant, and this is in our blog, just to put it into context. It's significant not just the Glomar response, but that a federal court concluded that unmasking requests by, as you said, Dad, Powers subordinates, which was acknowledged in the NSA memo declassified by Grinnell, were, quote, from and attributable to Power herself. This is the quote from the court. So it comes down to this. Yes. Are unmasking requests made on behalf of Power equivalent to unmasking requests from Power? There is no suggestion here that in making the request, the, quote, authorized individuals were acting beyond the scope of their agency relationship with Power. So here, the request from Power's subordinates were a request from her. And her whole response to this publicly, Dad, has been, I didn't really make these requests. And the court just said, yes, you did legally.
Yeah, she was basically saying, look, that may have been actions taken by my staff. I'm not responsible for that. And what the court said, yes, you are. But again, I go back to what was the UN ambassador doing unmasking security obtained warrants or unmasking information that had been obtained from American citizens involved with a competing presidential campaign? And her defense was, well, I wasn't doing it, my associates were. And the answer to that was, your associates are you. So you don't get to hide behind your staff in making when these unmasking requests were being made. I think that in and of itself is probably the most significant aspect of this win. And they may challenge it, by the way. I wouldn't be shocked if the State Department FOIA office files an appeal on that, because that was a landmark.
Because it impacts Joe Biden, Dad. It impacts Joe Biden. And those State Department bureaucrats, about 98%, you want to look up on Open Secrets, you put all their names in, donate to Democrats. So most of the bureaucrats there are not going to like the fact that now the court has legal language in federal court that it's Joe Biden is the last name listed, Dad, when Rick Grinnell made that declassification document on the Mike Flynn unmasking. Joe Biden's name. It's not his chief of staff. In Obama's case, it was his chief of staff's name, Dennis McDonough. And the court is even saying, well, that would be like Obama himself making the request. But correct. In Joe Biden's case, it says Joe Biden, so now whatever excuse he tries to use, the court said, it was you, Joe Biden.
That's right.
And that's because of our case.
Exactly right. So this case set a very significant precedent for transparency in government, for the ability to get information, for the ability of lawyers like at the ACLJ to go behind government attempts to thwart or to obfuscate or to, in this particular case, blame others so that they wouldn't be responsible. All of that bodes well for the future of this type of litigation, to get answers to real questions that the American people have.
You know, Dad, this is a time, as we have about a minute left here in this final segment of first half hour, and we come back with our second 30 minutes. But it's a very important month for the ACLJ. It's a matching challenge month, which comes to an end at the close of this week, and we've got thousands of contacts coming in at aclj.org/help. Our attorneys working on these issues from FOIA to unmasking to the singing ban in churches, pro-life issues, and of course all these school issues as well parents are facing. We represent all those people and all those churches and entities at no cost to them because of our donors, and they can get a matching challenge donation now this month. That it's important.
It is important. Let me say this. I woke up this morning and I get a report of how many new contacts we had, and I think it was this morning alone there were 88 families that had reached out for legal assistance to help their kids or to maybe get a reallocation of some resources, which is federal legislation, which I know you're talking about with Van, will really help. But I want to say to our ACLJ members that we can't do it without you. We're not charging these 1,100, 1,200, 1,300 families that we're representing because of your faithful support of the ACLJ. But as we always...
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Thanks for joining us for our second half hour of the broadcast. And remember, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share this with your friends and family. Our team, our production team, is monitoring the hearing going on right now in the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Jerry Nadler, who tried to impeach, of course, the President of the United States, President Trump. And this is a hearing involving the Attorney General and oversight of the Department of Justice and Attorney General Barr, who opened the hearing. You know, you give your opening statement in written form over to the committee because you don't ever get enough time to go through your full statement. And he says in his statement, I'm quoting directly Attorney General Barr, "Ever since I made it clear that I was going to do everything I could to get to the bottom of the grave abuses involved in the bogus Russiagate scandal, many of the Democrats on this committee have attempted to discredit me by conjuring up a narrative that I am simply the president's factotum who disposes of criminal cases according to his instructions. And judging from the letter inviting me to this hearing, that appears to be your agenda today." So he then heads to that first. Calling, this is the Attorney General of the United States, calling Russiagate scandal bogus. And Than, now Capitol Hill has been briefed by the DNI on a new declassified document that shows that the FBI was spying using the same FBI agent who was going after Mike Flynn to, quote, brief the Trump campaign as they were getting closer to Election Day, because that's what you do, and then filing those briefings, which were approved by Peter Strzok, under the Crossfire Hurricane file, not under presidential candidate briefing files. And at the same time, we found out that the source of the Steele dossier, the FBI lied to the FISA court, so people should go to jail, because they said the source was Russia-based, that Christopher Steele's main source was Russia-based, and guess where he was based? Washington, D.C. Surprise, surprise. Couldn't have predicted that one. And at the Brookings Institute, so a think tank that's got a lot to answer for, by the way, as well, about whether or not they knew this was going on, because this guy was also getting paid by Christopher Steele. And you find out on top, so you got all of that together, Than, that they lied to FISA, and Senator Lindsey Graham has said they also lied to Congress on that Russia-based sourcing is why, in the first place, they ever relied on the now heavily discredited Steele dossier.
Well, Jordan, maybe a thought on both of those points. First of all, on the political pressure point, the Attorney General went on to say the president has not attempted to interfere in these decisions. On the contrary, he has told me from the start that he expects me to exercise my independent judgment to make whatever call I think is right. That is precisely what I have done. And Jordan, I think that statement parlays directly into the second observation I would make, and that is that each of the individuals you just made probably need to sit up and take notice to the fact that the Attorney General is doing just that, following the facts where they need to go and letting criminal prosecutorial decisions follow the facts. You go back to the phrase that you, or the statement that you read, Jordan, and that he will not dispose of criminal cases according to his instructions. He's going to dispose of them, Jordan, based on the facts, and the facts that are coming out spell a very troubling picture, paint a very troubling picture for many of those individuals, I would say, including the source that worked at the Brookings Institute that was not in Russia. Jordan, I think that's yet another individual that needs to be very nervous based on what the findings of the Durham investigation will be. And Jordan, look, it probably doesn't have a lot of value, me speculating how that will wrap up, who will be involved. But look, all of the atmospherics point to a picture that I think indictments are already being worked on and formulated. I don't know when we will know about them and who they will entail, Jordan, but all of the atmospherics say that that's what's happening.
We will keep covering the hearing. When we come back on the broadcast, we'll play more sound from the hearing as well. A lot of it is speeches, to be honest, and it's because the Democrats, most of them, don't want to tangle with Attorney General Barr. He's too good at shutting them right down, and he's proven that time and time again. Remember, folks, we just had a big victory, federal court on FISA. We'll explain that when we get back. If you didn't follow us this first half hour, representing over 1,000 families right now with dealing with these school issues, all at no cost because you support the ACLJ financially. And if you can, donate this month. It's a matching challenge month at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. I want to start taking some of your phone calls now because we're joined by Andy Economo, Senior Counsel with the American Center for Law and Justice, a former U.S. attorney, currently still prosecuting cases on the behalf of the state of Georgia when they need to bring in someone with unique skills like Andy's to prosecute a case. So he's still active in both, you know, on both sides, but being in the defense world, as part of the president's legal team and on the prosecution side. So he understands from both the wrongs and rights that can happen on either side of the issue. And Andy, I think Mary Ellen has a great question on line one. Mary Ellen calling from Illinois. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Oh, hello, and congratulations on all your great work. So, but I have a quick question. You know, we've been hearing for how many months, maybe even a year, about the John Durham report. And is it true that if the report doesn't come out in August, it won't come out before the election because of some prior tradition that you don't put something out there like that in the hot electoral cycle?
Andy, what do you think about that? I mean, it's like if this doesn't really get out before the election, and there have been stories about that, whether or not Durham is going to be able to finish that. People call it a report, but U.S. attorneys don't usually just do reports. Usually, I mean, he might be doing one because it's a special matter, but usually they're just tasked with figuring out if there should be criminal charges brought or not.
That's right, Jordan. I don't think the election cycle has got anything to do with what John Durham is investigating and what he's ultimately going to do. When he is ready, he will then present his findings to a grand jury, and a grand jury will make a decision. I don't think he's going to make a report. I think he's going to make a presentment to a grand jury with the various charges of violation of the criminal laws of the United States, if he has found any, and the chips will fall where they may. And I don't think that he's going to time it to affect or not affect an election. He's going to present it to a grand jury when the time comes. If it's before the election, fine. If it's after the election, fine as well. I don't think he's going to let that affect the timing of the presentation of the case to the grand jury at all. So you needn't be afraid that the criminal process is going to be tainted or affected or influenced by electioneering.
So there you go. And then I want to go to Bill's call because, Andy, I think you're great, again, because of being on the defense side of high-profile impeachments, the Mueller investigation, representing the president, your senior counsel with the ACLJ, but still also the state of Georgia and sometimes counties and districts. They bring you in as a prosecutor as well. You're a former U.S. attorney, so really understanding both sides of these issues. And Bill has a great question coming in from Wyoming Online 3. Bill, welcome to Jay Secchio Live. You're on the air.
How do you do? Thanks for taking my call. Owing to what's been going on and been revealed so far, I've got a question for the whole panel to jump in on, is the fact of with what's going on, what would happen, if you can give an opinion of what could happen if somebody decides I'm better off getting out of this and making a deal with the Attorney General?
You know, so, Annie, I mean, I think if they were going to take a plea deal, that means there's there's other people going down. I mean, you wouldn't take a plea deal if you weren't going to bring other charges, likely. So that would be because this person had information that likely would lead to at least criminal charges that you felt pretty confident people would be found guilty of committing crimes.
Yeah, that's right. If somebody knows something and they want to come in and admit in court that they know something, frequently to get it off their chest and to work an arrangement, we call it plea negotiations. They're free to do that. And perhaps John Durham has found somebody who has, in the course of the investigation, decided to admit to their wrongdoing. He'll make a plea arrangement with the United States. That defendant, that plea sometimes can be sealed, and it may not be made public. The sentencing may be deferred, but anybody can plea at any time with the concurrence of the United States attorney, and if it's accepted by the court. And a lot of people do that. We don't necessarily know during the course of an investigation if somebody has pled, because as I said, a lot of these pleas are taken under seal so that they won't compromise the rest of the investigation. Under seal means that the plea is made, but it's sealed in the clerk's office, and it's not a public record. It's ultimately unsealed, but anybody can enter a plea arrangement with the concurrence, as I said, of the court and with the United States government. So that may be happening in this case. We don't know.
Folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about the hearing as well before the House Judiciary Committee, that's of course chaired, so it's led by the House Democrats. The Republicans are the minority party in the House, so they have members on that committee, but the Democrats are in charge, and it's led by Jerry Nadler, who chairs the committee and was one of the House impeachment managers trying to remove the president from office. Of course, he failed doing that, but he's still bringing in the Attorney General of the United States to try and batter him, which doesn't usually work very well when they try to do that to Bill Barr on the Russia investigation. And, you know, Andy, we just had a big win in federal court on a FOIA matter on unmasking, because usually on these unmasking requests that involve national security issues, like the Michael Flynn investigation, and that's what ours was about specifically, when you go to any of the intelligence agencies or the State Department, which works a lot with the intelligence agencies, they respond with what's usually called, it's called a Glomar response. And it's basically the thing everybody hears in movies. You know, we can neither confirm nor deny. It's like what the CIA is known for. We can neither confirm nor deny. And the court will accept that a lot of the times. In our case, the court just came back and said, no, you cannot tell the ACLJ. And this is an ACLJ case, Annie. They said, the judge came back and said, you cannot tell the ACLJ that, because the record of who was doing the unmaskings of Flynn was declassified by Rick Grenell when he was the acting director of national intelligence. So, Andy, the fact that we've gotten through that first hurdle to get this information on Samantha Power, who made the most unmasking request, that's part one of why this was such a huge victory. And I want your thoughts on that.
Yes, Jordan, this Freedom of Information Act request that the ACLJ filed against the State Department is a great victory. Judge McFadden was very clear in saying you can't say anymore on the unmasking. You can't admit or deny the existence of records dealing with this. You've got to say whether you've got them or not, and then you can come in and say why they shouldn't be disclosed. In the case of Samantha Powers, they wouldn't admit or deny whether or not she had unmasked people. But you know what the court said? If a principal does it, that is, if the big senior official does it through intermediaries and lower officials, then it's as if that senior official did it himself or herself. So Joe Biden can't say, I didn't unmask. it was someone who I told to do it who did it, or someone who was doing it at somebody else's direction. Ultimately, the shoe comes to rest on my foot, and that's what happened with Samantha Power. It's going to happen with Joe Biden. It's going to happen with Obama's chief of staff if Judge McFadden's order is going to be upheld, and I think it will. And that was a tremendous victory for the ACLJ. No more can the government hide by, well, I'm not saying yes and I'm not saying no. No, you got to say yes or no, and then you got to give a pretty good reason as to why or not why that information should not be disclosed. So that was a big victory that we had in the district court in Washington, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, this is what was so important to me, and I think, Andy, that goes to that point specifically, and then get your thoughts a little bit on the hearings. But Joe Biden, Andy, was that last name on the declassified document that from Rick Grenell, the last person to put in a unmasking request on Flynn, and was also one of the last people to get a briefing that we know about in the Oval Office from Comey and Strzok and Sally Yates and others on the Flynn matter. And then he put in, not his chief of staff, but even the court said if it was his chief of staff, that would be like him doing it. But in his case, right, it was his name that was listed. And they said, regardless of him trying to say it was somebody else, if they had the authority to make an unmasking request and work that closely with him, and they put his name down, that it's him under the law.
That's exactly right. In other words, if you're the one who directs a subordinate or an intermediary to do it, the law basically now, as stated by the court, is you did it. You did it, and you have to take the responsibility for why you unmasked, that is to say, disclosed the identity of the U.S. citizen. And that is something that Joe Biden is going to have to answer for, and I like to see what his response is going to be.
Folks, we're going to continue to take your questions. It was great to have Andy joining us as well on the broadcast again. And so, folks, if you've got more questions for us on the air, 1-800-684-3110. We're still covering the hearing, and if there's anything important we need to bring to you right now, we will during our broadcast in the final segment. But we also want to take more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Remember, if you're one of those parents out there and you think you might need ACLJ legal assistance, but you're not sure and you want to ask us about it live on the air. And by the way, people who are doing that, who I then tell them to go to aclj.org/help. Remember, if we decide and you decide that you do want our legal representation, it's at no cost. If you want to ask us questions about that, even though we haven't talked about it as much today, we can do that as well and answer your questions, 1-800-684-3110. But let me encourage you. This is a critical week for us, the ACLJ, the last week in July. And it's a matching challenge month where you can double the impact of your donation. If you're financially able, don't do it if you're not because of the pandemic and the issues involving the economy. But if you're financially able, this is a great time. We're dealing with over 1,000 incoming cases at the ACLJ just on one issue. So donate today, aclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live, this is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. I want to play this exchange between Congressman Doug Collins, Republican from Georgia, and Attorney General Barr. This is from the hearing that's going on right now as we're live on the air. It's going on live on Capitol Hill before the House Judiciary Committee. Here's Doug Collins to Attorney General Barr.
Do you believe that there was actually a basis to go after General Flynn? I mean, what we've seen so far, what's been released, and especially keeping an investigation open, Peter Strzok kept it open. Do you believe there's actually a basis for the beginning of this investigation to start with or continuing it?
Well, I would just say I asked another U.S. attorney in St. Louis who had 10 years in the FBI and 10 years in the Department of Justice as a career prosecutor to take a look at it, and he determined based on documents that had not been provided to Flynn's side and not been provided to the court that, in fact, there was no basis to investigate. Okay. Flynn. And well, furthermore, it was clearly established by the documents that the FBI agents who interviewed him did not believe right. that he thought he was lying.
I mean, Than, that it's huge. And the fact that Democrats have to keep being reminded of this, that the FBI agents themselves, who ended up then in their first report saying that Attorney General Flynn, that NSA advisor Flynn, the former general, lieutenant general, he did not think he was lying to them. It was just they tried to couch his terms as lies, but then it didn't even matter. It wasn't important. So that was their initial assessment, and to shut this whole thing down, this whole investigation of Flynn. And then Peter Strzok comes back after agreeing with that, comes back and said, no, we can't, because top floor of FBI wants to keep going after the Trump campaign and Mike Flynn. I mean, it is kind of absurd to me that at this point, the Democrats still want to, they cannot give this issue up.
Well, it was entrapment, plain and simple, Jordan. It just really was. And look, the Attorney General essentially said in that statement, if I had thought there was a basis for the investigation, I would have not asked the U.S. Attorney to look into it. And in fact, when the U.S. Attorney did look into it, they not only agreed with me, they found conclusively that there was no basis for an investigation. And Jordan, I would just tie this to one other person. And I know I sound like a broken record on this just a little bit, but why were two FBI agents over there doing the investigation in the first place? You don't have to take my word for it. You can look at James Comey's own words when he said publicly on national TV, kind of bragged about it. He laughed and he said, well, I just sent a couple of guys over. Jordan, it was an open flouting of the policies and procedures of the FBI. It was an abuse of the power that had been bestowed upon the FBI director. And so, look, Peter Strzok and Joseph Pienka might have been the two agents inside the room doing the interview, but they were doing it at the behest of James Comey, and he needs to be held to account for that.
You know, folks, again, 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us. And you still have some time to get some calls in. Let me go to Mary in Maryland on line one. Mary, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live, and then Lisa, we'll get to you next. Mary, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, and God bless you for all you do.
Thank you,
my question is that Andy, just a little while ago,
yeah.
giving a response to something, said that Durham would not be pressured to take action on presenting evidence to a grand jury until he was ready to do so, and
right.
that he would not be pressured. So that, but my question is, if that's true, and he doesn't feel like he's ready to present it yet, and he doesn't get ready until after the election, and it turns out to be a new administration, won't he be fired? And wouldn't that be the end of it all?
I mean, he potentially could be. Now, that would involve one of those issues. I think, Than, that if it was Joe Biden who came in and his attorney general wanted to fire Durham, who's been there, served many administrations before this was done. Now, remember, after the election, you still have months. So it's not like you don't leave on election day. So it's not like November 3rd comes and then you're done. So that's one note. But second, Than, also, I think that it would be pretty scandalous to shut it down, though, it could certainly happen because they have that authority to do that. The president has the authority to choose what U.S. attorneys he wants and to fire them at will, including because they are political appointees.
Yeah, Jordan, both Andy and Mary are correct on this. I mean, the question had actually been about will there be a certain point in the election process where a report wouldn't be issued? Sometimes that is the case, Jordan. When it's an inspector general and it's not an issue that needs to go before the voters, maybe you'll wait till the political dust settles before issuing this report. But that's not what John Durham is doing. He is pursuing a potentially criminal investigation. There might be indictments made, and there will be no cutoff for that. Not only will there not be a cutoff in August, there won't be a cutoff in November. As long as the U.S. attorney is on the job, as long as the attorney general is on the job, it is their duty to see that to the end. So you could have those indictment raised all the way to the end. Now, where Mary's correct, and you alluded to this, Jordan, elections do have consequences. I mean, if you have a change at the top at the Department of Justice, if the attorney general, Bill Barr, is no longer the attorney general, the new attorney general could take John Durham off that task if it was not done. So Andy is certainly correct. No arbitrary deadline in August, no deadline even at the election. But Mary is certainly correct. A new attorney general could absolutely chart a new course for the Department of Justice, and it could spell the end of this.
You know, I don't want to do a book promotion for Peter Strzok, but and then we're going to get to Lisa's call. But I mean, Than, he's got a book coming out. This is a guy who is definitely under investigation by Durham in some way, shape, or form because he's involved too much in all of this. Whether or not there's criminal charges filed against him, that's up to Durham. You know, we don't get to make those decisions at ACLJ. We're not U.S. attorneys. We're not prosecutors. But he's actually coming out with a book, and if you want to know about where Peter Strzok is still to this day, pretty bold, because the book title itself is Compromised, Counterintelligence and the Threat of Donald J. Trump. These are the guys tasked at the top levels of the FBI, Than. They were the top level of counterintelligence to deal with, you know, these issues that are so sensitive, and partisan politics is not supposed to play a role, whether they like decisions or not. And yet, he's coming right out with a book calling Donald Trump a threat right before an election.
Jordan, I've got two documents in my hands. One is the opening of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. The other is the overturning of a Washington field office recommendation to close Crossfire Hurricane. What do those two documents have in common? They are both signed and authored by Peter Strzok. So I would say he's got really two choices. The one is to go the book route that James Comey went. The other is to go the route that some are reporting in Washington, D.C., that Peter Strzok is cooperating with John Durham and others. Jordan, I would strongly advise him to take that second path, because if he's going to go the James Comey route, these two documents that I'm holding are going to be exhibits A and B as he finds himself faced with a federal indictment. Of course, I don't know what John Durham is doing, but I can look at the evidence, and if I were Peter Strzok, I would be trying to get out of the way of that train.
You know, folks, again, let me take Lisa's call quickly. Colorado, she's been holding on. Lisa, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks to Jay and America Center for Law and Justice, your tireless effort to protect the American public, as well as our president, are always noticed. I'm just, in watching the AG Barr testimony today, I could not help but be blinded by the fact that this is supposed to be a testimony, a formal or written spoken statement, especially one given in a court of law, as you know. So he cannot even testify. The Honorable Barr cannot even testify, because once a Democratic House Judiciary Committee person speaks, they do not allow him to answer.
Yeah, well, that is a huge problem with these hearings, but it is part of it, unfortunately, Lisa. But Attorney General Barr is able to speak out on his own as well, and he shuts them down. He's one of the best at testifying I've ever seen. Support our work, folks. Matching challenge ends on Friday. ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.